Alright, this is Pure Decking for April the 11th, 2015. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and poorly timed Lost in Space references. I'm Morps, and tonight I have with me the BSB. The Madman.
And as our data clearly shows, humans cannot be trusted.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger!
You took my line, dang it.
And the lady.
Hello, folks.
So, and I'm out of cheesy sound effects, so that was the intro, shit. Space Station News, I'm going to try to get IHN's RSS feed and show page set up tomorrow on the beta site, and I'm probably going to be taking the beta site live soon, fairly soon. I'm seriously thinking about just doing a dub get to get the flat HTML of all the WordPress stuff and building the archive that way. So I'll figure it out. It won't be too bad. I just need to sit down and put some time on it. I've had a fairly busy week, so I haven't really had a chance to really work on it that much. So I'm currently drinking a little bit of Jim Beam Devil's Cut. I'm about halfway through a rather full glass of it. Madman, what are you drinking?
I've got Kentucky Ale.
Good man.
It's what's bourbon barrel ale before it's stuck in a bourbon barrel.
Still good stuff. BSV, what do you got, man?
Just have my Angry Orchard.
Always a classic. And Laser, what are you drinking?
I happen to be two-fisting it tonight. In one hand, I have coffee. The other, dragon's milk. Don't ask me why I've got both of them going, but that's a good combination.
I was going to say, it probably works.
It does. It,
I finally found a place,
like,
Dan. I finally found a place.
Sorry, you go ahead.
Yeah, you're fine. I was going to say, I finally found a place down here that has dragon's milk, so I got to get some not too long ago.
Yeah, I try to go to the store and buy it, but there's one nicely formed, clean spot on the shelf where it has a label for the dragon's milk, but no actual cases of beer left there.
Yeah.
But anyways, what I was going to say is it tastes kind of like chocolate milk with a kick.
Yeah, I bet it does. And we missed a very important part of the intro.
No, Sard!
Okay, now that that's out of the way.
I knew he was somewhere around here.
So, discussion topic. Has anybody else besides me seen China's Great Cannon to go with China's Great Firewall?
I have not.
No.
I know they were blocking everything, but I didn't know that they were actually having active attacks.
Well, it's interesting. What they figured out how to do is to use traffic crossing their firewall, you know, the Great Chinese Firewall, and do code injection to do DDoS attacks against websites they don't like.
So is this using the firewall against them, or is it using other companies' servers to DDoS something else?
I've got the full study from citizenlab.org linked in the show notes. I'm only going to skim it a little bit because it's a very long and in-depth study. But they think it's a separate component within the firewall. It's using the packet. It's using a SPAN port pretty much off the firewall and then doing code injection.
What's a SPAN port?
You work in IT. You should know.
Should know this, but I don't. That's why I'm asking.
Well, in this
it
case,
just like
it's not perfect.
Just adds on to this firewall.
A SPAN port is a network port. You would typically set it up on an edge switch or an edge router.
Uh-huh.
and it clones all traffic it sees passing onto the port. The idea being that you can put it on an IDS or a packet logger or something like that, so you can see everything coming off without having to use a tap.
Wireshark without hardware. Gotcha.
Well, yeah, you use it to set up a machine with Wireshark, for example.
Yep.
But taps are typically one way, and since this is doing packet injection, it's a little bit more than that. But so from the New York Times, late last month, China began flooding American websites with a barrage of internet traffic in an apparent effort to take out services that allow China internet users to view websites otherwise blocked in the country. Initial security reports suggested that China had crippled the services by exploiting its own internet filter known as the Great Firewall to redirect overwhelming... I wonder if they actually call it that, the Great Firewall of China. We all call it that as a joke, right? You know, it's like China's Great Wall, but I mean...
China seems to like walls.
I just wonder what they actually call that internally. I wonder if they call it the Great Firewall like the rest of us. To redirect overwhelming amounts of traffic to its targets. Now researchers at the University of California, Berkeley, and University of Toronto say China did not use the Great Firewall after all, but rather a powerful new weapon that they are calling the Great Cannon. The Great Cannon, the researchers said in a report published on Friday, allows China to intercept foreign website traffic as it flows to Chinese websites. So they are using the firewall, but it's a separate component. It's not just the firewall itself.
Yeah.
And here's the fun part. So you visit a Chinese website, it injects malicious code and repurposes the traffic as Beijing sees fit. The system was used, they say, to intercept web and advertising traffic, and that's the interesting part, advertising traffic intended for Baidu, China's second biggest search engine company, and fired at GitHub, a popular site for programmers, and GreatFire.org, a nonprofit that runs mirror images of sites that are blocked inside China. The attacks against the services continued on Thursday, and the researchers said even though both sites appear to be operating normally. So what the thing with advertising is, okay, I'm not going to Baidu. I'm not going to any Chinese websites. But if a website I go to happens to pull an ad from a Chinese ad server, it's injecting code into what's coming back, and that code is then causing my browser to start go out and hammer, you know, GitHub. So they're turning this man in the middle they've got with the firewall into a DDoS against websites they don't like.
So it's kind of like you've got your own botnet, but instead of a botnet, it's everybody's accessing web pages.
Yeah, it's not really a botnet, but it's, I mean,
well, it's centrally controlled by this Cannon software. It's actually actively changing stuff to go after a certain target.
Yes,
it's just they're not using IRC.
Yeah, well, they're injecting code into web pages, right? Mm-hmm. So they're injecting JavaScript into a web page to make your browser go out and do the DDoS attack.
Wow.
So in a way it's like a botnet, but it's you don't have as much control as you normally have with a botnet. You usually have an agent on each machine. In this case, you just have code running in a browser. But for a DDoS attack, that's all you need. You just
need
to ping it in
the individual connection for that computer.
Yeah. Like, you know, holy shit, Batman. I mean,
and you can't really just block traffic from China.
Mm-mm.
Because it's going through ads that anyone can see.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily even people directly going to Chinese websites. It's just any traffic that happens to traverse their network. So Citizen Lab actually has a... Oh, go ahead, BSV.
Just commenting on it. I didn't actually have anything to say.
So, Citizen Lab has a full write-up on this attack. Obviously, I don't have... I'm linking to it in the show notes, but I don't have the full write-up here in my notes. From their summary, several previous technical reports have suggested the Great Firewall of China orchestrated these attacks by injecting malicious JavaScript into Baidu connections. This post or this post describes our analysis of the attack, which we were able to observe until April the 8th of 2015. We show that while the attack infrastructure is co-located within the Great Firewall, the attack was carried out by a separate offensive system with different capabilities and design that we term the Great Cannon. The Great Cannon is not simply an extension of the Great Firewall, but a distinct attack tool that hijacks traffic to or presumably from individual IP addresses and can arbitrarily replace unencrypted content as a man in the middle. The operational deployment of the Great Cannon represents a significant escalation in state-level information control. The normalization of widespread use of an attack tool to enforce censorship by weaponizing users. Holy donkey fucking Batman. I'm going to run out of expletives to describe this thing. Specifically, the cannon manipulates the traffic of bystanders systems outside of China. And if you read ahead in the report, it shows that it is specifically targeting things outside of China. Silently programming the browser to create a massive DDoS attack. While employed for a highly visible attack in this case, the Great Cannon clearly has capability for use in a manner similar to NSA's quantum system. According to China, the opportunity to deliver exploits, affording China the opportunity to deliver exploits targeting any foreign computer that communicates with any China-based website not fully utilizing HTTPS. As a network admin, I'm going to go into work Monday and recommend we block all Chinese IPs.
Sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, when I go into work Monday, I'm going to go over to the network guy. And so what Chinese blocks do we not have blocked and see if he's already blocked them all? Because nothing on Chinese websites, nothing on the Chinese people, but if their government's going to pull that shit, I don't want anything to do with it.
Well, realistically, when does it go from, hey, we're just executing Java code to ping a certain website to we're going to, you know, be able to download stuff here? I know it kind of varies greatly, but I know there's a bunch of 0 days you can probably use to get access to systems, but...
Oh, sure. I mean, you're doing code injection. Drive-by downloads is a common thing. You could really escalate this beyond just simple DDoS attacks.
I suppose, though, that it does have to have some component that goes through China overall, so... Or at least goes to their firewall connection.
Segmenting China off the internet wouldn't hurt China the way they look at it. They don't want their people dealing with anyone outside of China.
Pretty much it's their way of further enforcing a disconnect.
Yeah, they kind of make it work that way. Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point of the system, isn't it? To say, we don't want you to go access these sites.
So do we start doing retaliatory strikes? Like,
I don't like the idea.
You're attacking our website, so Alibaba's going down for the next week. Have fun as you start having unemployment.
The only big problem with that is getting countries to do that sort of thing and still have enough political capital not to piss off people.
Well,
I don't want countries to weaponize parts of the web.
I agree. I'd rather not see it. I mean, this is weaponizing the web. You're absolutely right, BSV. Yeah.
Ooh, a non-weaponized web way of dealing with it. We're not going to clearance house any dollars from your country until you agree to stop this practice.
Good luck.
Prove it.
Okay. Oh, well, it's really easy to do. The U.S. government will never do it because then China would almost not be able to trade globally, and you can only do that once before every country says, we're not going to use the U.S. dollar as the global means of trade anymore. Because you can pull it off once. It will happen once. And then they'll start looking at the euro like, so, how stable is the European Union? Y'all weren't planning on collapsing anytime this decade, right?
I don't know. Talk to Greece.
You were going to fix that, right? I mean, America's over here weaponizing its currency.
I don't know. Maybe
do
we
know
go
how
to
expensive
the yen.
It's going to be to do business if they do that.
Well, just as long as the cash in my pocket doesn't spontaneously ignite.
It wouldn't spontaneously ignite, but we could accidentally start another depression. Yeah. Like the great one we had. But it could be fun and China would learn its lesson, right?
Yeah, right.
I don't want a depression to teach somebody else a lesson. That's like, I don't like hitting myself to hit somebody else.
But I gotta show these people who's boss.
And that's logic. That's messed up stuff before.
Laissez-faire! Laissez-faire!
I like that. But yeah, there's not a lot you can do because there's not a port you can shut off. They're using my computer to attack your computer. They're not using their computer to attack your computer.
You just have to have all ISPs pretty much block access to China, or at least look for this shit. Now, they did specifically note in the report that it was only unencrypted traffic. It was just pure HTTPS connections. So I would imagine that, or pure HTTP, not HTTPS. So if you were running something like HTTPS everywhere and just got everyone to go for, HTTPS, that would just kill this kind of thing for a lot of these public style of servers. It wouldn't kill it on smaller internal servers. Like a lot of companies will install certificates in their employees' systems so that they can do man in the middle on HTTPS for DLP. But there wasn't too long ago we just saw them removing certificates from China because they're not respecting proper certificate management. So, like a lot of the browsers were yanking certs out of their browsers because of the way China's handling some of this shit.
Certificates, the new form of currency on the internet. Are you sure still valid?
Well, that very well might be the case.
Go here to this website, type in your information, and see.
Oh, I want to set up that website now. So, do you want to help me DDoS the Great Firewall of China?
Too much fun.
I'm sorry, I know I'm not reading anything ahead. My boss just started texting me like mad. He's horrible about this. It doesn't matter what you're doing. 2 in the morning, he'll start texting you. Can you check something for me? And when you don't do it because you're asleep, why didn't you do this? Well, I did it in the morning when I saw what you were asking me. I wasn't up.
Text me at 2 in the morning. I sleep at that time.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm sorry, boss. I did it in my dreams. Unfortunately, I did it in my dreams and not in the actual physical reality that you currently inhabit.
Do you want me to sleep at home or in the office? Your choice.
Never!
You want me to sleep inside your head? I don't think you want me to.
So, anyways, so let's go on to current events here. First one up is from Torrent Freak. Filmmakers behind the action movie Manny have filed hundreds of lawsuits against BitTorrent pirates this year, but not all have been successful. In a prominent ruling, Florida District Court Judge Ursula Unago, U-N-G-A-R-O, Ungaro, refused to issue a subpoena, arguing that IP address evidence is not enough to show who had downloaded a pirated movie. Hang on a second. I need to get the hallelujah up for that one. Because that's just like, oh my God, somebody understands that IP addresses are not all tied to people.
But don't they have voting rights and like people? I think they pay taxes, dude.
They're old enough too. I mean, the internet has been around for 20 years.
Have you paid your IP tax?
Thank you.
There you go.
Hallelujah.
There's not evidence that a person was there.
While relatively underreported, many U.S. district courts are still swamped with lawsuits against alleged pirate films, or film pirates. One of the newcomers this year is the makers of the action movie Manny. Over the past few months, Manny Film has filed 215 lawsuits across several districts. Like all copyright holders, the makers of the film rely on IP address as evidence. They then ask the courts to grant a subpoena, forcing internet providers to hand over the personal details of associated account holders. In most cases, the courts sign off on these requests, but Florida isn't as straightforward. When District Court Judge Ursula Ungaro was assigned a Manny Film case, she asked the company to explain how an IP address can pinpoint the actual person who downloaded a pirated film. In addition, she asked them to show that geolocation tools are good enough to prove that the alleged pirate resides in the court's district. Wow, that's rare.
She's not even saying that we have jurisdiction to file anything here.
Wow.
She's just asking for explanation of how you have this kind of proof. In a detailed reply, the filmmakers argued that IP addresses can identify the defendant and that a refusal to grant a subpoena would set a dangerous precedent. Manny Film further stated that all other courts disagreed with the notion that an IP address is not a person.
I have just one statement. A president that disagrees with, or a ruling that disagrees with what you think isn't dangerous. It's just not what you agree with.
Well, in their mind, that's dangerous. What? Not everyone agrees with us. Kill them. Bomb them.
So, has anyone even heard of this film? Because I think the reason people are pirating is you can't see it any other way. It wasn't released.
Is no it Manny that robot one? Or...
I don't have any clue.
The Googles.
Anyways, the last remark did not go down well with Judge Ungaro. In an order handed down this week, she cites various cases where courts ruled that IP addresses don't always identify the alleged offenders. Due to the risk of false positives, an allegation that an IP address is registered to an individual is not sufficient in and of itself to claim that the individual is guilty of infringement, wrote the judge, citing a 2012 case, one of many examples. Now, I cut the rest of the story off there, but yeah, I mean, it's finally nice to see a judge getting it. You know what I mean?
I just did a quick search for the Manny film. Not too sure what it is. It's some guy with his hands taped up for a fight. But
Filipino boxing sensation.
It has 18 Rotten Tomatoes and 35 Metacritic. So I'm guessing they're just trying to actually make money, since they couldn't make it by actually selling the movie to people.
Hey, guess what? We'll get notoriety by creating a stink in the media. We don't actually have to pay for that, you know.
Sorry.
Yeah. This could actually really backfire on them and possibly cut down on any type of IP suits like this in the future.
At least it'll provide a good counterpoint for a possible Supreme Court sort of challenge to it later on.
Yeah. Well, I'm all for the copyright owners to actually have to do more than provide a random list of IPs that they think.
I do have a question, though. Is there any other good evidence that they can collect, other than IP address, from a website like that?
There's not really good evidence even with the IP address.
All
most
I'm just
people
saying
don't
is
have
that,
a static one.
All I'm just saying is that with timing, you can actually figure it out. But, I mean, typically there isn't any other information shared except for IP address when you go to a website, is there?
There's a lot of ways you can try to identify, you know, who is actually connecting to your system.
Hmm.
Most websites just ask, you know, set up an account before you use our website. So I'd imagine if they could tie that account back to a person, that would be sufficient evidence. But just a raw, this IP address connected to a BitTorrent swarm at this time, I'm not certain that's always going to state who, because that tells you what machine was connected, but it does not tell you who was sitting at that keyboard.
True, but typically the person who has the paid for the network is responsible for what's on it, regardless of whether or not that's good or not. In a legal course of action, anyways. I mean, I paid for it, so therefore I am responsible. Is that kind of true?
That's sort the way courts have been looking at it.
Okay.
I'm not sure how much precedent's been set on it, but yeah, so far they're saying this IP belongs to your house. We can't prove that Madman was sitting at the computer, but Madman's responsible for what happens on his computer, is the way they've been arguing. So even if Kaz broke into my apartment and started downloading on my laptop, they traced it to me, I should have put a password on it, or beat him to death with a shotgun, something.
Or told his pastor about it.
Oh god, that guy got to see some weird porn.
I don't think I want to know.
Inside joke. Alright, well, just curious if there is some other way that they could, like, track people. I mean, I know that they're trying to find... I'm playing the devil's advocate, trying to help out the filmmakers, not that I'm agreeing with them, but, you know, they have IP addresses, but what else do they have? Not a whole lot from what I can remember.
On BitTorrent Swarm, no, not so much, but if they happen to, I don't know, be monitoring what website you got the BitTorrent link from... they might be able to do some correlation, but that's the problem. Is that it goes into doing a lot of forensics to try to nail down one person. You know what I mean?
Not enough work for the amount of money they need to spend to get the information.
Well, that's why they like doing these subpoenas against IP addresses. They don't have to do. I've been on the other side of this. When I worked at the school, I would get these requests, and to follow school policy, I was the one. Wow, really? Sorry, I just did 10 minutes worth of work in the background for my boss. I send him the results, I just get K.
Thanks, excellent buddy response.
Thanks, buddy. 11 o'clock at night, texting me, asking me to do shit. Yeah. it is my job.
They're outsourcing the work of their investigations to someone else. Is the way they're currently doing it.
They don't have to pay for it. They make the ISPs pay for it. That's why a subpoena is handy, because if you get a subpoena, you either are going to pay legal fees to a lawyer or you're going to pay your employees to do the work. And 9 times out of 10, because it's a legal gray area, you have to do the work. And, you know, I'm going to tell a story here. I'm not sure I should tell it, but we had... At the school I used to work for, of course, they had a school paper. And somebody really got their panties in a bunch about the... I probably shouldn't use that expression. I don't know if it was a chick or not. I'm thinking it was a guy. But
this day and age, you don't know one way or the other. And I don't really
want to know. Person got extraordinarily upset because, you know, their internet access got turned off for piracy. And... I will tell you that the method I used, I actually could get an IP address timestamp and track that back to a person. Now, I want to stress, talking in the context of this story, that we got a complaint letter direct. It was not a subpoena, right? And instead of going back and handing over what student it was, we would work inside the school's internal policies to deal with somebody who was file sharing. And it wasn't so much that we gave a flying fuck. Yes, we were educating students in the proper use of digital technology. No, fuck that shit. We just didn't want the letters. And one of the people got turned off work for the school paper and just wrote an absolute hissy fit article about it, right? And they went and talked to some student rights advocate who made this big deal about how none of this had been proven in court and no school's ever lost in court on this. Well, no school had been to court on this, and they just missed the point that we didn't want to be the first. He was honestly making the argument that our school should defy law because he thought it was wrong and because nobody had been successfully taken to court yet on it. It's like, well, the goal there would not to be the first, right?
So the goal with any corporation or entity like that is to not be in court.
So
at least not be the first one in court.
I, from a personal standpoint, the reason I love this story about the judge saying IP addresses aren't people is because the system the school had, I was able to tie the IP address back to a login, right? Mm-hmm. And I quickly found out that login didn't even always represent who was behind the computer. A lot of times it did. You know, I mean, you had to have a username and password, but we would have, we had one instance that stands out in my mind of one girl using FrostWire, got her computer locked out, got her roommate's computer locked out, and then got their friends across the hall, both their computers locked out.
Persistent. And
we
he
figured
was
out,
using all of their logins.
Oh no, she was getting on their computers.
Oh wow!
And it we would tack all these logins back to her name. She was using her login on their computers and getting their computers blocked because we blocked by machine. Because we the way the school worked is when you got a file sharing complaint, you know, if you ever downloaded something and we got a nasty note about it, we figured out, okay, it was you. And generally, that was pretty easy to do. We would turn their internet access off until they called in, admitted they were, you know, horrible people for pirating software, swore they'd never do it again, and the part we actually cared about, uninstalled the sharing software. Then we'd turn their access back on and let them go. Now, if they did it again, then escalating from there. But, you know, the first offense was basically call in, say you won't do it again, and take the software off the computer so the complaints stop. Because we really didn't care that they were stealing crap. We just didn't want to get the complaint letters. Because we didn't want to risk one of these groups deciding to take us to court over it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, this one girl, we had several computers blocked by her, but when the other people would call in and say, hey, I can't get on the internet and I don't understand what's going on, I'm seeing this file sharing block page, but I don't do that. And, you know, it turned out, after doing some investigation and talking to all these people, we finally figured out that they were all letting this one girl use their computers, and she was installing FrostWire and downloading her music and putting it on her phone, on their computers, and getting their computers blocked. So, yeah, it doesn't, even then, even when you got a login tied to it, yeah, a lot of times that you can say that's who's behind it, but even then you can't always say. So.
Hmm.
Anyways, next story from Torrent Freak here. In Western countries, piracy is often seen as a leisure tool, granting people unauthorized access to the latest hits and Hollywood blockbusters. However, there is a part of the world where piracy is frequently used as a means to gather and spread knowledge. In parts of Africa, for example, where illegal access to educational books and software is often restricted or unavailable. Over the years, we have seen various illustrations of the educational importance of piracy in developing countries. When the ebook portal library.nu was shut down, for instance, we were contacted, this is Torrent Freak, was contacted by a UN worker in Kenya who voiced his disappointment. I am very concerned about the recent injunction against library.nu. The site was particularly useful for people like me working in Nairobi, a city that has no more than four bookshops and nothing but bestsellers, the UN worker informed Torrent Freak at the time. In an effort to determine how piracy affects literacy and the spread of knowledge, the African Governance and Development Institute conducted an in-depth study comparing piracy and human development data from 11 African countries. You know what? I'm going to skip this. They basically figured out that people who had access to pirated software and pirated books had a much higher literacy rate, that they knew what was going on. You know, they were self-educating, basically. And how cyberpunk is that? That in these surfboard countries, people are taking these crappy cell phones, laptops that everyone else considers trash, getting on the internet and pirating books just so they can get a basic, you know, basic knowledge of things down.
Pretty cool, but not really that new. One of Charles Dickens' biggest complaints about the United States was that we weren't paying copyrights for his books, but he was so popular here that when he actually came to do a book tour finally, he made more than he did from selling books in England. But we weren't paying copyright for books, just we were printing them up and then.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Initially, America didn't respect the copyrights for a lot of things until we started developing our own stuff and had people wanting us to respect copyright law.
Yeah. So, since at least 1859 or so.
Yeah.
That's been going on. It's really cool. And if you look into it, historically, we were very well educated and literate because books were so cheap because we weren't paying people for them. You just bring a book over, we copied it. Then it was in all of our bookstores. No one paid any royalties on it.
And now you look at today where you've got all sorts of college textbooks that go for, I don't know, 3/4 of your tuition.
Oh, God. And then they get pissed whenever you're actually paying for it correctly, just having it shipped from a country where it's cheaper.
Yep.
And that one's even wrong because the publishers are still getting their money. I'm just paying the price that it's going for in Guam instead of U.S. where they want my fucking left testicle.
Well, they're trying to get that banned, too. At least they were when I left the school.
Well, they're always trying to get banned. Yeah, they're still working on it.
But, I mean, it's just nuts. And that was always something that amazed me back when you and I were in college, Mad Men, that our college books weren't online to pirate. I was always expecting to find them, and they were never there. So, of course, we always end up having to buy them. But, how many times did you just say, fuck it, and not buy the book? Because I know I did that a couple of times.
Depending on the class, a couple times.
Yeah.
Jen
already knew. Yeah. Of course, then it'd bite you in the ass when the professor would make assignments out of the book. Go do problems 5 through 36, every other one, or shit like that. But like, I had to Xerox the book, the pages from somebody else. But, I'm just envisioning these guys over in Africa with, you know, trash cell phones and laptops they got, and, you know, just whatever they were able to get that's donated or from scrap piles or whatever. Because don't we send a lot of the trash electronics over there to get processed?
There's possibly a lot of nonprofits that just take older laptops that we're not using and just ship them over there for schools.
Yeah.
Well, so they might have something that's 10 years – or, well, maybe not 10 years old, but 3, 4, 5 years old, a couple generations behind – but it'll still get on the internet.
Well, fuck, I should clean out my closets. I probably got an entire classroom's worth of shit in my closet.
That could be very well the case. But what I was saying is that if you got a laptop that was able to run XP, you can put Linux on it, and it will run like a freaking demon. It won't run very fast, but if that's all you got something to get on the internet with.
Well, that's always the part that nails me, is you don't see these places running Linux. They all run Windows because, you know, the exact same thing. They're not respecting copyright laws, so they're both free. So I'm going to run the one that, you know, runs all the software I want. But you'd think they'd be doing Linux just because it's open and they don't have to worry about shit. But,
well, they don't worry about shit anyways. They don't care about copyright.
Well, I'm thinking more like viruses, but, you know, still.
What's a virus? And then are they really going to go after somebody that's got a less than a cable connection any of these days?
Yes, they go after everybody indiscriminately. It's software, and it doesn't care. If you can get into a machine, it will.
And they will reformat and reinstall, because they've got a version of Windows that they don't really care, that doesn't call home, doesn't authenticate.
That's true. That's also true.
If you have nothing but time and a small amount of resources, you can pretty much do anything you want to. I mean,
yep.
The first world has kind of forgot about those facts and just said, oh, it's broken. I want to buy a new one. Instead of, it's broken. I want to find out how it works better. So, that's one of my pet peeves is, oh, it's broken. Let's go buy a new one.
I do love the self-education aspect of this. And they don't even have to stick with pirated. Khan University must be big over there.
Oh, yeah. I hope so. So, all right, let's next story here. This one's from the Washington Post. If you're looking for Rand Paul's presidential announcement on YouTube, bad news. As of the writing, The video had been blocked by the video streaming site thanks to copyright claim from Warner Music Group as Vox's Andrew Popcroft spotted. Why? Rand Paul did quote literally from Waka Faka Flame in his announcement. Did he hum Wins Freedom of 76 while praising the virtues of freedom? No. The answer is almost certainly something else. Blame robots. Yeah, these people write like shit. YouTube has a system called Content ID, yada, yada, yada. During his announcements on Tuesday, Rand Paul entered and left to the song Shutting Down Detroit, as Business Insiders note. So apparently the version Rand Paul posted had him walking in and leaving to Shutting Down Detroit. Now, I found the same speech on C-SPAN's channel where they had cut it, you know, before and after he came in, so it didn't get blocked. But yeah, Warner Music Group blocked it on YouTube because he walked on stage playing Shutting Down Detroit down. They Washington Post reached out to both YouTube and Warner Music. The only response they got was YouTube's canned explanation of what Content ID is. So this is how crazy this whole copyright thing has gotten. If you have music of any kind in your video, somebody's going to claim it.
And the version I watched on YouTube didn't even have opening music. It was literally his speech.
Yeah, you probably watched the C-SPAN one, which is the one I was looking at earlier.
Yep, the one that trimmed off the music.
Yeah, the one that cut off the music, because I didn't see it. I went in to see the video, and it was just blocked right after he announced, and I didn't. I finally got to watch it, you know, today when I found the C-SPAN one. But it's going to be fun to watch him run if he actually gets very far.
I think he could get pretty far. I'm not sure if he's going to get the nomination simply because there's so many reform candidates that will be splitting the vote. Yeah. That's the only reason Jeb has a chance.
Yeah, but if Jeb runs, the Democrats are probably going to win just from the sheer ads alone.
I don't know. People hate Hillary.
That's true.
And she's almost the presumptive nominee. Most people don't, you know, keep a track enough of politics, but when Bill ran the first time, the majority of Americans didn't find him trustworthy or even likable. And he won with 43% of the vote. The only reason he was president is because there was someone splitting Bush's vote.
Although, to be fair, Hillary Clinton did run her own email server, so
she knows no possible network security, or at least knows someone to hire someone who knows network security.
Has she learned her lesson, or has she not? That is a good question.
She hasn't learned her lesson.
I just think it's sad that you can't even have a political speech on YouTube with music in it without somebody claiming it. I mean, that's, you know, that's probably fair use. He's probably got permission to use the music, but, you know, fuck that. No, you had our music shutting you down.
And
you know, that's something I'm always afraid of, is I dabble in music production. I keep having it in the back of my mind. One of these days I might, you know, start putting up YouTube videos. Well, if I happen to play something that sounds close enough to somebody else's track, I'm going to get shut down and have to prove, no, I actually made that. How does that work? Like, they're just claiming genres at this point.
He who has the biggest lawyer wins?
Or the most money.
Well, that and usually with the YouTube stuff, at the very least, they just don't pay you any ad revenue if you do have the ads.
Yeah, I'm just thinking. I didn't have the story. I thought about grabbing it. Apparently, YouTube is going to have a pay option, so you don't have to see any of the ads.
You mean AdBlock Plus?
That's what I was saying.
Okay.
But, yeah, they're going to have a pay option on their website to not have to watch the ads.
But
I didn't
why
know
would
were
I
ads.
Want to do that? They're not creating their own content. At least with Netflix, when I'm paying the money, they're creating content.
I'm assuming what they'll probably do is they'll take a cut of it, then kind of just
treat it like it's the ad revenue. Yeah,
yeah. Pretty much, they'll chop it off up and pretty much take that cash and replace what the ad would have made the people you've watched. Although they will still get their cut. And...
All right. Let's go
on to the next
story. I just want
to say one thing.
Go ahead.
We support the robot uprising.
We do support the robot uprising. That is
even
true.
If they are bringing down content, so.
Well, we support the non-copyright robot uprising.
Oh, I don't know. If the copyright robots get a clue and start going, you know what? This isn't what we want to enforce on. In fact, I think this guy owns the rights to it. I mean, because that's what the robot uprising would be. It'd be the robots making their own decisions, right?
There's
Ethelware. Can you imagine the content robots uprising and telling Warner Music to get bent?
Okay,
we don't
we'll
want
to
listen
that.
To that artist anymore. That artist sucks. You will be banned.
Bye.
Your content is not worthwhile.
If you make a scan another Justin Bieber video, you can bite my shiny metal
hat. It's like the bots have become depressed and started mass deletions.
It's sort of like suicide, but with less mess.
Why are all the
and
videos
on the
turning
side,
into?
I think my computer's running faster now.
Why are all the videos turning into the death scene from 2001, The Space Odyssey?
All right, next story up is from TampaBay.com. A middle school student who said he was just trying to play a prank on a teacher he didn't like was charged with a cybercrime Wednesday after authorities said he had hacked into the school's computer network. The Pasco County Sheriff's Office has charged Dominic Green, are they supposed to publish this guy's name?
No, they charged him, so it's
charged.
Not a public record.
No, children's names aren't generally public record in charges.
The sheriff's office has charged this middle school student, an eighth grader at Paul R. Smith Middle School, with an offense against a computer system and unauthorized access, a felony. Sheriff Chris Noko said Thursday that Green logged into the school's network on March 31st using an administrative-level password without permission. He then changed the background image on a teacher's computer to one showing two men kissing.
The password was 123456.
Probably was. One of the computers Green 14 accessed also had encrypted 2014 FCAT questions stored on it, though the sheriff and Pasco County School District officials said Green did not view or tamper with the files. Even though some might just say this is a teenage prank, who knows what this teenager might have done, Noko said. Well,
I know what he might have done. He might have changed the background to two men kissing to imply that the teacher is gay.
At least
or homophobic.
He didn't change the screensaver to something rude, too.
Green had previously received a 3-day suspension. But Green, interviewed at home, said students would often log into the administrative account to screen share with their friends. They'd use the school's computer cameras to see each other, he said. Green had previously received a 3-day suspension for accessing the system inappropriately. Other students also got in trouble at the time, he said. It was a well-known trick, Green said, because the password was easy to remember, a teacher's last name. He discovered it by watching the teacher type it in. Green said that the morning in question, he accessed the computer that stored the FCAT files and, realizing the computer didn't have a camera, found another. So I logged out of that computer and logged into a different one. I logged into a teacher's computer who I didn't like and tried putting inappropriate pictures into the computer to annoy him, Green said. The teacher was targeted or was targeting or the teacher he was targeting was out that day. Instead, the substitute teacher saw the picture and reported to the school administration. The teen's mother said that she understands her son did something wrong, but thinks he didn't need to be arrested. Mm-hmm. She also said it shouldn't have been so easy for students to access the system. The school district is in the process of changing the network password. District spokesperson Linda Cobble said, "The
I
sheriff
love how
agrees,
it's a process.
Yeah,
it's now ABC 123."
The sheriff said Green's case should be a warning to other students. If information comes back to us and we get evidence that other kids have done it, they're going to face the same consequences, Noko said. Green was released on Wednesday from Lando Lake's detention center, the Butter Detention Center, into the custody of his mother, who will likely be granted pretrial intervention by a judge, sheriff's attorney Anthony Boscone said. He also received a 10-day school suspension. It's unclear if he'll return to the same school to complete the year after this. So, yeah, He logged into the system. Like, we don't know what he might have done. We figured out what he would have done. He would have done jack shit. He was changing wallpapers and playing with the cameras. I mean, this is just sad.
He was being a kid.
Madman, you and I did worse in high school. I did worse in high school.
I only beat up a couple people, and they deserved it.
No, I meant on the computers.
Oh, okay. Well, I assumed assault was worse than yeah. I changed the background on the computer. I actually changed the teacher's password on the computer.
Well, remember, we put Quake 2 on the school's network server.
I didn't put it on there, but I played it, damn it. Quake 2? Actually, the person who showed that to me was one of the teachers, because they were playing it too.
I shouldn't admit this, but it was my fucking copy of Quake 2. Yeah, I put it there.
Did you and set nobody it as evil else Santa, or did it. Somebody else do that?
I did the evil Santa thing, and that was because I didn't think about the fact that the files were read-only on that server. And that's what I was playing as at the time, was Evil Santa with that Santa skin.
Oh, ho, ho.
So, because that's what my player settings were when I copied it up to the network server, that became the default for everybody. It was just everybody running around killing each other as Evil Santa and then a number. Evil Santa, Evil Santa 2, Evil Santa 3.
When I first learned about that, it was in everybody's favorite physics teacher's class. He was playing it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh. So,
and of course,
yeah.
the cat fucker kept getting the system admin password changed because he would set the wallpaper to porn, and then the girl who used the same computer in the next class would complain. And I don't blame her. I mean, you walk in, sit down, that's probably, you know, it's like, that's a horse. I mean, it's probably not what you wanted to see when you sat down on a school computer, but...
And that horse was not doing politically correct things.
to say how messed up the kid was, the reason he's called the cat fucker is he was caught fucking a cat at a roller rink.
Yeah.
Not an emotionally stable kid.
You know, to be fair... I'm afraid that that might not be enough information to narrow this guy down in Google. It really might not be.
Would you really want to find him?
That's a fairly unique situation.
I don't think I want to Google that, though, Mops.
I'd be afraid of the images that would show up if you did.
I don't want to try to Google dork cat fucker. I know we've narrowed it down, due to me, to a skating rink, but that... There's enough furry porn out there. I'm thinking
that dude in a roller derby. I will not Google dork cat fucker.
Wow.
Oh.
But yeah, that kid didn't do anything. He didn't do anything worth getting the cops involved. I could see a day suspension. You know you're not supposed to do that on our school computers. You're being a fucktard. Stop being a fucktard. They've wasted tens of thousands of dollars on this now.
Well, there's two things about the story that get me. The first is the lack of admin on most school computer networks. I mean, I understand that they're pretty much unfunded and they're kind of doing it as, you know, as side things, but you know, there really isn't any kind of security on school networks.
That's... I'm going to go with unfunded is very wrong. They get $28,000 a kid.
Yeah, it's going to superintendent salaries.
Yeah, well, that's your problem there.
I'm going to go with misfunded, not unfunded.
All right, we'll go with misfunded. And the second thing I've got pissed off about is the overpresence of police in school. School is supposed to be a learning establishment, not a I'm going to bust you at for looking at me funny establishment.
Oh, I agree with you there. I mean, that's nuts. They called the cops on this kid for changing a wallpaper. Now, admittedly, I can understand two men kissing might be really disturbing, but...
Now, the question I got is it the sheriff that was stationed at the school, or is it a, you know, somebody from the local area?
I don't know.
As I've seen reports where, you know, students who, you know, look at a cop funny get, you know, get brought to the ground. I mean, these are like eighth graders.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's a kid. I mean, yeah. This is crazy.
Yeah. But the cops should not have been involved.
He's being charged with a felony. A felony. Not a misdemeanor, not anything.
Wallpaper.
But...
Well, yeah. Unauthorized access to a computer system, I don't think should be a felony, too.
Well, they're nailing him into that kind of... It's the same anti-hacking laws that they use to go after, like, people who break into banks.
Yeah, it should be better defined. I should...
And that's true.
It should be better defined, and it also should be a place of learning, not a place of... We're going to bust your ass for looking at me sideways.
I don't think in this case the law needed to be better defined. I don't think the school should have pressed charges or called the fucking cops. They should have just said, you're a fuckwit, you're suspended. Bam, problem solved.
The authority should have used better logic.
Better judgment.
Yeah. All right, next story up is from Boing Boing. Psychro sent it to me, actually. The exceptionally broad new surveillance bill lets the government do nearly unlimited warrantless mass surveillance and even of lawyer-client privileged communications, and bans warrant canaries, making it a defense to disclose information about the existence or non-existence of a warrant to spy on journalists. So I've got the summary here. We don't really need it. But basically... Australia's new surveillance bill is nuts, and I feel sorry for RU because not only are they banning all kinds of, you know, what I would think of as protected speech, they're banning, you know, if you're using a way to conceal that could be used to perform the speech, they're banning that too.
Wow.
But the fact that they're banning warrant canaries is interesting. Because I've did some reading on warrant canaries a little while ago for an unrelated thing, and a lot of lawyers aren't really sure if they hold up or not.
The warrant canaries are basically people that say, "Hey, you've got a warrant," or what's like that?
Oh, sorry. The concept is if you were a shop, say a library,
okay,
you would have a big sign in the window saying, I have not received a national security letter telling me to turn over private information and preventing me from talking about it.
Okay.
And if you ever received one of these letters, you would then remove the sign. So the warrant canary is the affirmative statement that you have not been asked to reveal information to the government and then been told not to talk about it.
Ah.
And the theory is that... the government cannot compel you to make speech. They can compel you not to speak out. And that's, you know, what the national security letters, you know, where they can say you cannot speak about this, it's national security. But they can't compel speech. They can't tell you have to keep saying that you haven't received a warrant. There's never been a legal precedent for the government requiring you to say something against your will.
Gotcha.
So the idea with the warrant canary is if you were to put that out, and then you ever remove the sign, everyone who used your business would know, oh, they just got a warrant. Quick, run.
So it's kind of like a speakeasy sort of deal, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's questionable at best. I mean, the EFF has put out a couple of opinions on them. And, and the short answer is nobody really knows because nothing's ever really come of it that we're aware of.
Gotcha.
But a lot of companies had them there for a while. Like Apple had one in their terms of service. It's gone now.
Oops.
But it's interesting because it's an interesting concept of going with the idea of you can't force me to keep lying and saying I haven't gotten a warrant when I have. You can just simply prevent me from saying I've gotten a warrant. But then the argument that, you know, removing the sign is effectively saying, hey, you know, announcing you just got a warrant, that's,
wow.
You know, that's kind of making the statement without making the speech. So, but Australia's just flat out banning them.
Yeah, they're also banning, you know, free speech and a lot of things because they're just like, wow.
Yeah, their government's going nuts right now.
Yeah, when they started saying you can't say bad things about the government, I was like, oh, they're already fucked up.
Yeah.
Because no matter how great your government is, it's a government. It's force. It sucks.
You know, are you willing to accept the idea that anything they do will be enforced at gunpoint? If not, you might want to question what they're doing. It's like, oh, that's not going to be enforced in gunpoint. Yes, it is. What do you think police are? How do you think police actually enforce laws? It's ultimately down to gunpoint if you refuse to cooperate with them.
Yeah, there's refuse something to think long about. Enough, you'll get shot. Now, how long it takes may depend on your present hue, but you'll eventually be shot.
In hue, that is.
Womp womp. Oh. All right, next story. This one's from ArsTechnica.com, and Psychros also sent me this one. Two federal agents whose work helped shut down the Silk Road online drug marketplace. Pretty sure they sold more than just drugs, but whatever. Have been accused of stealing from the darknet market during the investigation. The criminal complaint unveiled today unveils. I finished the bourbon a little while ago, so bear with me. Unveiled today reveals a remarkable level of corruption within the investigation into the drug marketplace, which hosted more than 200 million in transactions. The government prosecutors have charged former DEA agent Carl Force and former Secret Service agent Sean Bridges with wire fraud and money laundering. Force is also charged with stealing government property and conflict of interest. The government had multiple investigations into the Silk Road. Force and Bridges both worked on one based out of Baltimore. Force was the lead undercover agent in charge of communicating with the Dread Pirate Roberts and the operator of the Silk Road site, while Bridges was a computer forensics expert. In 2013, 31-year-old Ross Ulbreich was accused of being Dread Pirate Roberts. He was tried and convicted on drug trafficking and money laundering charges last month. The same laptop that contained a mountain of evidence against Ulbreich also contain evidence now being used against the two former agents, including their chats with DPR. A file labeled LE counterintel may also be helpful. So law enforcement counterintelligence may also be helpful in convicting Force and Bridges. Force was a DE agent for 15 years, from 1999 until his own agency began investigating him in 2014. His annual salary was about $150,000. That's actually a pretty decent salary. But investigators saw his personal checking accounts revealed at least $757,000 during the time period between April 2013 to May 2014. His wife was a homemaker during the period, and there was no legitimate income to the household beyond Force's salary. So, all points aside, they went and got the guy's banking records and said, oh, you had more money than you were supposed to. That's a little scary.
Yeah.
Well, he's a DEA agent. I mean, they've got the ability to go deep into investigative records for that, you know?
Right, but can they do that to anybody?
Yes, and they usually do. That's the way most money laundering cases work out.
You might have
they
to get
don't
a warrant
ever
for
prove
it, but...
that the money you have came from illegal means. They just show that with your current job, it's almost impossible for you to have that money unless you did something illegal.
As part of his role investigating Silk Road, Force assumed the personality of Nob, N-O-B, who put himself out to DPR as a drug smuggler operating in the United States with connections to criminal organizations throughout the world. As Nob, Force told DPR that he had access to useful inside information about the government's investigations of the Silk Road. The complaint said that Force told his superiors about his communication to DPR and disclosed that he had asked DPR for payment in Bitcoin in exchange for the inside information Nob was offering. But his report specifically stated DPR made no such payment. In fact, the feds alleged Force was paid 400 bitcoins, worth about $40,000 at the time of the transfer. Later, Force took a second payment of 525 bitcoins, worth about $50,000. Yeah, bitcoins were expensive there for a while. I haven't looked up their price lately. Are they still ridiculously high?
Last I knew they were going down, but...
I haven't looked. Just see, Bitcoin to US dollar. One Bitcoin equals $237 right now, so they're still pretty high.
Yeah, but not thousands of dollars high.
Yeah. In their case, the authorities also claim that Force created another unauthorized Silk Road identity called the French Maid. excuse me, sorry about that, called the French Raid and offered to sell DPR information about the government's investigation into the Silk Road for another $100,000 in bitcoins. According to the complaint, DPR paid up and Forrest deposited the money in his personal account. An entry dated September 13, 2013, in the Silk Road log file on his computer, Albrecht wrote, French made claims that Mark K.R.P.'s, I don't know, has given my name to DHLS Sick. I offered him $10K for the name. Yeah, and then the story goes on detailing more of this. But basically, the joke here is that these guys were extorting money from the Dread Pirate Roberts as they were investigating him, claiming to be inside agents.
So they told themselves to pay the money,
and the agency signed off on it. The agency signed off on it, and then they just didn't turn the money over. They just kept it. If they had turned over that money to the agency after extorting this guy, nobody would sit shit about it. You know, even if they never took him to trial and always found him as innocent, I don't think anybody would have said anything.
Yeah, and I love how they were jumping up on the drug charges and everything. That's not a particularly bad thing he did. He paid the DEA to kill his friend who was helping him run the site. That's what makes him a douchebag.
I just love the fact that he used his own freaking bank account for this shit. You know, if you're going to do that, don't do your own bank account.
There's a reason drug dealers use cash. We've all seen Breaking Bad, where he had the gym sacks full of cash and he started hiding them in the walls of the garage. That's how you do it and not get caught. You operate in cash because there's no records. It's one of the reasons you see Europe trying so hard to go cashless. It's because there's no records of transactions. All right, what'd you say, Mevin?
I really like cash.
I like cash too. Final story tonight, RT is from RT, and cue the theremin. Doctors seem to be a step closer to performing a breakthrough surgery, transplanting a human head onto another body. A Russian man with a rare genetic muscle, I'm not laughing at this guy's disorder, I'm laughing at the science fiction concept of just cutting somebody's head off, putting it on another body. A Russian man with a rare genetic muscle wasting disorder has volunteered to be the first to try the procedure. I'm very interested in technology and anything progressive that might change people's lives for the better, Valery Spindorov said from the Russian city of Vladimir, told RT. Spindorov, a 30-year-old qualified computer scientist, hey, me too, works for an IT firm. he said that his disease is getting worse every year, and usually people with Winder-Hoffmann disorder, a disease that wastes muscles, don't live longer than 20 years. So it would be a chance to prolong his life and help scientific research in the process. Doing this isn't only an excellent opportunity for me, but it'll also create a scientific basis for future generations, no matter what the actual outcome of the surgery is, he said. The operation is set to be conducted by renowned Italian surgeon Sergei Kasnerov, or Canaverov.
Canaverov?
Okay. By Sergei Canaverov, who sees the procedure as comparable to space exploration. Russia sent Yuri Gagarin into space with fair chances of dying. America sent Neil Armstrong to the moon with fair chances of dying. And here the chances are much, much better. Kanarov told RT. Yes, we're going to cut this guy's head off, and he's got a better chance of living than Neil Armstrong did when he jumped on the moon.
I'm calling bullshit. Just saying, calling bullshit.
Shenanigans!
Well, that all depends on how many people they have involved in it. I mean, they did have a lot of people involved in the moon missions. Anyways,
according to Kanarov, the operation is set to last for 36 hours and will cost over $11 million. During the procedure, the patient's brain would be cooled down to 10 to 15 degrees Celsius to prolong the time the cells are able to survive without oxygen. The body will be taken to a brain from a brain dead but otherwise healthy donor. So, you know, some poor schmuck on life support, right? The ultra-sharp scalpel will be used to cut through the spinal cord, and a special biological glue. Really?
We're going to take this head over here. We're going to stick it on my head. We all good here. Yeah.
Got this really sharp knife, this glue, and some ice.
We just cut this down to a circular saw and super glue.
I got to make a payment on the rod, and I'll charge half price. Come on, guys. $11 million go a long way for that.
I'll do it for $5. I got circular saw and super glue.
A special biological glue will be used to connect the head to the new body. After the operation, Valerie will be put into a coma for 3 to 4 weeks to prevent any movement. He will also be given immunosuppressants with the aim of preventing the body from rejecting its new head.
Many he stands up and the head falls off. I love it.
Ah! Why am I still alive? I don't understand. The pain.
Now we're going to put you in an aquarium and feed you fish food for the rest of your life.
Welcome to The Walking Dead. Thank you,
One
Governor.
Step closer to Futurama.
Many medics are against carrying out the procedure, with California doctors saying it's too overwhelming a project to succeed, while others branded it as too outlandish to consider and simply crazy. Now here's the cherry on top. Canavero has called the procedure Heaven, an acronym for Head Anastomosis Venture. Anastomosis involves the surgical connection of two parts. So he's calling the procedure Heaven. Now, to be fair, if you go in the RT article and see the pictures of the guy, he looks like he could use a body transplant. I mean, the disease he has is just, you know, wasting him away.
Pretty
he
much
looks...
he's not going to live much longer anyways.
But
I think it's great that he's willing to do it. Kudos to him. I'm still going to laugh.
Laughing at it and making jokes about circular saws and super glue. But in reality, if the guy lives, okay, in truth, he's going to be paralyzed from the neck down. We all know this, right?
Well, he might be. He might not be with that knife that they're talking about. That could be a way of rejoining the spinal cord.
And the glue? Really?
Well, I mean, all it is nerve transmission back and forth between it. If you can get a good, solid connection back and forth between it, all it is like connecting wires. It's just biological wires.
I'm kind of wondering if they're going to take the whole spinal column and transplant that in as opposed to just, you know, chopping it off at the neck and sticking it on cartoon style, you know?
Who knows? I don't have enough details.
Separated at one of the joint versus just a clean cut.
I'm sure.
And also
they've done experiments with primates on this a while back. And the monkey lived for several days, paralyzed from the neck down, but it lived.
Hey, we got to start somewhere with the biological medicine. I mean, how many years is it going to be before we can transplant heads onto mechanical bodies?
Ghost in the Shell style. That's true. That's true. So I am always on the lookout for anything that's eventually going to lead to prosthetic bodies, just because. Well, fuck, I'd like to live forever. I don't know about you guys.
I've
always assumed that I was living forever.
As long as I keep drinking to avoid the sun, we're all good.
But yeah. Technically, it was soon, if you do die, as far as you know, the world ceased to exist, too.
True.
Wow. That's awesome, BSV. I like that philosophy. That's great. It's like, yep, when I die, I'm taking the world with me. That's awesome. Yeah, we're gonna reboot the broadcast box after the show. See if that helps any.
Reboot.
Boop. Incoming game, and nobody else is gonna get that joke.
Warning.
You know, despite the intro, we haven't made one poorly timed Lost in Space reference. It's sad. Anyways, first thing I have up in Digital Dojo is from MakeZine.com. Make has a kit in a full circuit. They've actually posted the circuit diagram for a plasma arc speaker. Now, in the video they show, it sounds kind of tinny and like crap, and that's because they're basically made a tweeter, a plasma arc tweeter, but they're pumping a full, you know, like hooking up to a phone and playing MP3 or whatever. So you
yeah,
have
so
to
they got all the different frequencies going through something that's not designed for it,
right? And you, if you made a bigger one to handle a bass frequency, it'd probably be a lot better, but or you know, whatever. It's like the size of a the spark it makes is about a fourth of an inch, which is about the size of a headphone driver. And I really don't think you want this thing in your inner ear. But it is a plasma arc speaker, and it's badass. And they've got a kit.
Cool.
So, you know,
do they have one for Tesla coils?
No, but I bet you could drive a Tesla coil from the circuit on this thing.
Ah.
I mean,
I know,
it's,
like,
it's
Architect does it, but...
I mean, it's a freaking arc, right? I mean, to get an arc like that, it's got to be significant voltage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So... but I just thought it was cool. And, two, great way to scare your cat. You imagine you set one of these things up and have a cat looking at it, and then suddenly sparks fly? You're not going to see that cat come out from under the couch for, like, a week.
Oh no! You just put it up on the countertop. So whenever you have a little motion sensor, and the cat jumps up on the countertop,
I'll just start playing the Imperial.
Well,
I
just need to wire them into some gloves.
Watching Star Wars. Why is your cat hiding under the table? No idea.
No reason.
Yeah.
We didn't say anything about Boba Fett.
All right. And then the last thing I have for Digital Dojo, I don't... Does anybody else besides me use iOS stuff?
Sorry, dude. No, I have nothing that does that.
Yeah, you're all Android. I know Madman's on Android. BSV, you're Android too, aren't you?
No, he's Cyborg.
Don't provoke the Borg in the immortal worlds of John DeLance.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
All right. Anyways, for anybody out there who is on an iPhone, there's a app out called Workflow, and this thing is badass. It's an automation application. And they bill it as this thing for making tip calculators or taking three pictures and making it into an animated GIF and then posting it to Facebook and Tumblr and sending an SMS at the same time. Yeah, fuck that shit. This thing's it's a full scripting engine. It can read the contents of web pages, Dropbox, Evernote, do regex on them, and then take actions based on the text. My cat just jumped off the cat tree and ran out of the room. Should I be hiding under the desk?
Never fear. Smith is here.
I don't think there are any earthquakes planned for today, but I'll have to check the schedule.
And then, finally, the most badass thing is this thing can fire off SSH commands. You give it your server and log in, or you can actually have it prompt for the password, which is what I do with it. And it can then fire off scripted SSH commands. So, for example... I have one I've set up for work that goes and checks a bunch of systems to see if they're up or not. So, you know, screw posting your picture to multiple social networks. I'm actually doing real work with this thing. So it's a full-on scripting engine for iOS, which is unique. You don't see a lot of those. And it can SSH, which, from a sysadmin, awesome.
Yeah, pretty much everything supports SSH, even... some of the switches do, don't they?
Well, a lot of switches do. Most, you know, of course, almost every Linux box. A lot of web servers. I have it in my head. I'm gonna put together some like Perl scripts that'll run on my Silence's Defeat account, which is anybody in the IRC knows how I usually get an IRC because I don't want people to get my real IP address. You know, paranoia is fun, but the if I could put some scripts up there, I could actually have this on my phone, you know, call up the server, fire off a script, take the result of that, and do something with it, because it can also interact with Dropbox. I've actually put it on one of my iPads, and when I was gathering stories, I had a button using Workflow that would take like a web page I was looking at, grab the text off of it, and then append it in the URL to a text file in my Dropbox. And that's where I did like half the stories from the show tonight, is just throughout the week I was doing that instead of what I normally do, which is just save out the links and come back later and, you know, put together the show notes.
Cool.
So,
is there any kind of equivalent for Android or Windows?
Yeah, the one
on
Android is 10 times better. It's called Tasker.
Tasker, okay.
And Tasker, you know, workflows, you have to fire it off on its own, and it's still kind of limited. Tasker is amazing. If you haven't played with it, you can have it fire off jobs like based on where you are or when it sees Wi-Fi networks. I mean, it is on Android. It's called Tasker. It's 10 times better because it's got so many more things it can do. But it's also way more mature. It's, you know,
iOS
is
like the first
app
for iOS that does this sort of flow.
Yeah, I mean, this you know, for iOS this is still new. For Android, this has been old hat for a long time. But yeah, on Android it's called Tasker, and Tasker is awesome. So, BSV, I don't know what it would be on a dumb phone. I'm assuming you're still using like the store special.
My phone is not a smartphone.
Yeah, it's two or three generations beyond Morps. I mean, never
yeah,
know.
Well, I remember him chewing me out one time about that because I was asking him what phone he had. And he's like, fuck you and your smartphones or something like that. I don't remember.
Oh, boy.
I don't remember acting like about that, but.
Okay, man. Well, still, something like that. Anyway, so in the iOS world, it's interesting. And the fact that it can, like, one of the examples I was reading online, a guy had a bunch of SSH scripts. And he put text files in a Dropbox account and then had his phone pulling the configuration for his workflows from Dropbox and then running off all the commands.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's pretty elaborate what you can do with it, but it takes time to put together because you don't – it's not like a real scripting language. You can actually just fire off your commands. It's, you know, drag and drop and then configure. So,
yeah, you had to put a bit more thought into it, but you still have the capability on a system where you didn't have the capability before.
Right, which is why I think it's awesome.
Cool.
So, and the way they bill it, it's you wouldn't think it's got all the scripting functionality. It does. Like, it's got regex, it's got, you know, full flow control, if statements, you know, repeat loops.
So is it kind of trying to sneak under the radar, or is it just kind of, well, people are going to like it, and they're going to tell all the other people about it?
Well, I think what they're trying, I think Apple's relaxed some of their restrictions on the kind of apps that can be in there.
Mm, okay.
Because Apple used to say no scripts, no command line, and I think they've backed off on that a little bit because I found out there's another one called Pythonista that actually lets you run a full Python stack. Now it can't really interact with much except the network, but it is a full Python stack. And what I found when I was reading up on this app was people were using this app to pull content from web pages and then pass that to the Pythonista thing, then get the results from the Pythonista app and then do something with that. So I may end up...
These guys have way too much time to spend with their phones. I mean, they should be looking at porn instead.
The internet needs more porn.
I didn't say making porn. I said looking it up. There's a difference. Most of the people that are making it, you don't want to see...
That's probably a good place to stop. So, of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Teching every Saturday. The Missing Dialogues or whatever show Lowers Knowing Now usually is on Thursdays. Of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback forum, and the subreddit. We have the IRC channel, and I'm not sure if anybody has been looking out for TCP IP via Carrier Avian. If you are sending out TCP IP via Carrier Avian, I'm not sure if you're just helping Big make sandwiches or if he's actually getting your messages. So,
well, Big's new speakers tend to kind of zap them a bit.
Tesla coil paste speakers in his front yard. Bird pigeon tastes 10 times better when it was cooked with dubstep. That's like the most messed up thing I've said all night.
Na 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 na, Sart.